Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Gopijana Malabha Giri Badadhahuti Gopijana Balaba Kiri Badadhahuti Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vana Chaldi Yamuna Tira Vana Chaldi Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Haruti Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Haruti Gopijana Malabha Girivaru Rauti Gopijana Balabha Giri Varu Daudi Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vana Chaldi Yamuna Tira Vana Chaldi Jai Hurada Madhava Kunja Biharuti Jai Hurada O Madhava Kunja Biharuti Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravitakacharya Ostra Teta Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Chalanad Bhaktivedanta Goswami Mari Srila Prabhupada ki jai, ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Gauti Vaishnav friend ki jai, Namacharya Srila Vilas Thakur ki jai, friend say kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sridvaita Gadadha Srila Prasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrind ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopagopata Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavanam ki jai, Maturidam ki jai, Jagadatha Sami ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Shimati Tulasi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi ki jai, Gaur Primalanda Hari Hari Go. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Om. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pristaya Vudale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani Namaste, Saraswati Devi Gauravati Pachari, Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened our eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while we were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Om Aganat, Tumidam Vasha, Gananjana, Shlakya, Chakshur, Unmeditam, Yena, Tasmai, Shigurave, Maha. So we are continuing with our study of Bhagavad Gita. And we are right now going to continue. We're on the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Text 23 is the next text. And here we go. So, let me just clear the screen so I can see it. Here we go. So, text 23 in the fifth chapter. Shaknoti haivaya chodum Prakshadira vimokshanat Kama krodot bhavam vegam Sayukta sa suki nadaha Shaknoti is able, Iha Eva, in the present body, Ya, one who, shown whom, to tolerate Prakti forces that are the body, Vimokshanat, giving up, Kama, desire, Krodha, and anger, Udbhavam, generated from, Vegam, urges, Sahahi, Yukta, in trance, Sahahi, Yuksuki, happy, Nadaha, human being. So translation, before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. So Srila Prabhupada explains that if one wants to make steady progress in the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. There are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. And actually, Prabhupada is making reference to the Upadeshamrita here of Srila Rupa Goswami, where he says the same thing, you know. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jivo vegam, udarupashna vegam. Same thing Prabhupada just said. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called a Goswami or a Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger. And thus the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. And one breathes very heavily, like a snake. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in the state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. That is very hard. So, one thing that's very interesting here, in this verse, actually it's quite interesting. So how does one do it? That is the question. That's the $64,000 question. How can you tolerate these things? Well, there's several different ways you can tolerate. You can tolerate because you have a higher purpose. If you have a higher purpose in life, then that's what's important. It's a question of your priorities, to pronounce it properly, what you consider to be more important. And you can actually see that people who are materially successful, they're able to focus on their priorities of material success. And we're not talking about spiritual success right now. They're able to focus on it and not get deterred by these other things like desire. Of course, they do get desirous of different things like money, and they do get angry, yes. But they are able to check these things when they interfere with their goal. That's the important thing. So what is your goal? We asked this question before. People should ask themselves the question, what is your goal in life? If your goal is to make money, you better check the forces of desire and anger. If your goal is to be a dog, then don't check your forces of desire and anger. And if your goal is to be Krishna conscious, then accept everything favorable, reject everything unfavorable. And you can use desire, I want to be Krishna conscious, like the gopis, they desired Krishna. And you get angry at basically, of people who are defying or against the supremacy of God, like Srila Prabhupada did. Okay, that's one way you can do it. Now, a further advanced stage is you identify yourself as a servant of Krishna. And as a servant of Krishna, you just do what pleases Krishna. Easy stuff. And if you get, you know, the force of anger wells up in your tiny little heart, then what do? You say, I'm just a servant. Not supposed to do those things. Okay, it's the second way. Third way is you actually identify with who you are in the spiritual world. That's a very advanced stage. Don't try to jump up to that stage. Today we were talking about that with some devotees. What would happen if someone told me who I was in the spiritual world? Well, I tell you, it'd be very confusing for most people. If you were told you were a gopi, a coward boy, a tree, a cockroach in the spiritual world, what would you do about it? And then it would confuse your whole dealings in this world. It's really important for a pure devotee who understands who he is in the spiritual, who she is in the spiritual world, then it's important to just like separate both of those worlds, because you don't want them intersecting too much. In other words, whoever you are in the spiritual world, let's take, for example, I am a cow in the spiritual world. Not saying that I am, but, you know, this is just an example so we can make a point. So let's say I'm a cow in the spiritual world, and in this world I'm a sannyasi. Cow sannyasi. Anyway, so I have to be able to switch gears at the right time and not be in the other gear of cow gear. Cow gear, interesting word. Not be in that gear while I'm in this world. You know, I'm explaining philosophy, and then all of a sudden, while I'm giving class, moo. So you have to be sort of like a split personality. And your cowness, your royal cowness, cannot be explained to anybody else except for maybe the spiritual masters, not that you go around and tell people and have discussions about it. Anyway, so one has to have the proper adhikar, the proper right, and the proper ability to be able to deal with understanding one's spiritual nature, or else it's simply a disturbance. So therefore, Krishna doesn't reveal it until you're ready. And how do you know you're ready? When Krishna's representative, the spiritual master, tells you, you are ready. Or where the Vaishnavas say, you are ready because you are on the higher stages of nishta. Nishta, as we've explained before, means complete steadiness in devotional service 24/7 and 365 and 366 on leap year. So that's the qualification for understanding. Because nishta means you've actually come to the point of vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pashta vegam, controlling the mind, the belly, the genitals, and words, and all that other nice stuff. Okay, so let's continue. Next verse. Yanta sukantara ramas tatantar jyotirevaya. So yogi brahma nirvanam brahmabhuto digachati. So, synonyms. Yaha, one who, anta, sukha, happy from within, anta, rama, actively enjoying within, tata, as well as, anta jyoti, aiming within, eva, certainly, ya, anyone, saha, he, yogi, a mystic, brahma nirvanam, liberation in the supreme, brahma bhuta, being self-realized, adigachati, attains. One whose happiness is within, this is what we're talking about before, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. That's called jivan mukta. One is liberated. One is understanding what his relationship is with Krishna. He's meditating on the relationship with Krishna. So he's not so much concerned with the external, just having a good old time with Krishna and his associates. Just like a child who's having a good old time with his friends before the coronavirus. Good old time with his friends, and his mother calls and he doesn't hear her, because he's having a good old time. Simple as that. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. So he's Jivan Mukta, which means liberated even in this life. And then ultimately, after leaving this world, he goes back to the spiritual world. And then he comes back to save us. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? Wow, that is a powerful statement. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? So the process of bhakti is actually to bring us to the point of relishing happiness within, spiritual identity. And the other things appear insignificant. Like Prabhupada quoted yesterday, one of yesterday's verses, Nayam Deho Bhajam Riloke Kashtam Kamam Arhite Vidbhujamye. You know, why should we enjoy the happiness that the gross animals enjoy? He can therefore sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. That doesn't mean he sits silently and makes everything void or empty or thinks of nothing. How can you think of nothing? Because by thinking, you're not thinking of nothing anyway. So that's the point. You're thinking of your relationship with Krishna. You're really enjoying life. So that's when you see a pure devotee. You really can't understand what's going on, unless he tells you. But you can't really understand what's going on. There's something else going on there that's not, you're not privy to. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahma Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 30th chapter, text 20, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. So in other words, the prerequisite for going back to home, back to Godhead, is you have to understand who you are. That's a fact. So, and you have to be absorbed in that relationship of service to Krishna. So, next verse. This is such exciting verses. This is like the coming attractions for all of us. Lavante brahma nirvanam rishayak kshina kalmasaha chinadvaidva yatatmana sarvabhuta hite radaha. Lavante achieve Brahma Nirvanam, liberation of the Supreme, Rishiha, those who are active within, Jina Kalmashaha, who are devoid of all sins, Jina having torn off, Dvaidaha, duality, Yata Atmanaha, engaged in self-realization, Sarvabhuta, for all living entities, Hite, in welfare work, Ratha, engaged. Translation. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts. In other words, that particular person who is just like absorbed internally, whose minds are engaged within, same thing, are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings and are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So one of the benefits, side effects of actually being absorbed within is you want people to join you. I mean, if you're having a good time spiritually, you're definitely not envious. Materially, sometimes we're having a good time and you don't want people to join you. To spoil the fun. Like the Grinch that stole Christmas. But then you look out at everyone and you think, why shouldn't they enjoy too? And sometimes I think, I'm not saying I'm on any high platform, but sometimes when we're at Mangalarti is a song, or a group of songs that we sing at 4:30 in the morning. Sometimes I look out at the other devotees who are there at Mangalarti, and they may not be enjoying. Why are they not enjoying? Because they're disconnected from what they're doing. They're maybe into the bodies. You know, I'm so tired. The only reason I'm here is because that mean old sannyasi has harassed me to the point of, you know, he'll criticize me if I don't go. So, therefore, it's like, Mangalarti, I hope it's over now. But sometimes I look at devotees and they're not dancing. Now we have a fantastic dancer who descended from the spiritual world who dances during Mangalarti, but that's a different issue. So, and I look and I just feel, I gotta help them dance. What can I do to help them get into it? You know, be lively and be happy. In the old West, they used to take pistols to make people dance. You know, they point a gun at people's feet and say, dance, partner. Can't do that. So all I can do is speak a little and try to inspire people. But if they do, they dance with their arms raised. Even if they don't know mudras or anything like that, they will feel ecstasy. They will feel so much ecstasy. It's unbelievable. But you have to have faith. You may not feel like it in the beginning, but when you do it, then you experience it and say, wow, that sannyasi was right. So this is the point. So, busy working for the welfare of all beings. In other words, you feel you want people to join. You want people to be like that. You see people's faces. They're just suffering. I mean, just like, for example, we're, another point is we're working on some construction. Now we have a contractor and he has some workers. The workers have some unfortunate habits, like smoking, things like that. And I just feel, you know, I'd like them to be Krishna conscious. I want them to chant. You know, they're not ready right now. I mean, they're more interested in Mountain Dew than Krishna consciousness. So it makes us feel bad. I mean, that's the nature of a devotee of Krishna. You're feeling ecstasy, but you feel bad because others are not joining. You want everyone to be happy. Everyone in this material world. You won't be happy until everybody, like this one devotee, his name was Vasudev Dutt. He prayed to Lord Chaitanya that, please give me everyone else's bad karma and let me stay here and let everyone go back to Godhead. And that's a very high level of compassion that we cannot imitate, but we should understand to have some degree of that sort of compassion. Only a person who is fully in Krishna consciousness can said to be engaged in the welfare work for all living entities. Because if you're not Krishna conscious, your welfare work may be taking people in the opposite direction. You say, oh, people are starving. Let me feed them meat. Ooh. Feed them meat. Guess what happens? You're helping them increase their bad karma. So you have to really know what is the real welfare work before you engage in welfare work. Because you can't change people's karma, but you can actually, by your actions, you can make their karma worse. Imagine that. So don't do that. So you really have to know, it's like a doctor. You have to be trained. Like a doctor has to know how to help people. And I've used that example before. If you have some medical issue, don't come to me. Because I don't know how to help you. You know, except for some small things like if you cut yourself, put some aloe vera paste on it or something. When a person is actually in the knowledge that Krishna is the fountain of everything, then he acts in that spirit. He acts for everyone. Then when he acts in that spirit, he acts for everyone. The sufferings of humanity are due to forgetfulness of Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme provider, and the supreme friend. That's why everyone is suffering. Because if you remember that, there's no more bad karma. Finish. Kaput. And that's why we're suffering. That's why we have all these problems in the world today. The coronavirus. The corona politicians. That's why. Therefore, to act to revive this consciousness within the entire human society is the highest welfare work. One cannot be engaged in such first-class welfare work without being liberated in the Supreme. Okay, you may say, all right, I'm not liberated. Let someone else do it. Well, if you follow the directions of a liberated person, then you can engage in that welfare work. Simple. But if you just like concoct your own welfare work, then you're not engaged in welfare work. But you know, things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So just work with people who are liberated, and Prabhupada certainly is liberated. A Krishna conscious person has no doubts about the supremacy of Krishna. He has no doubt because he is completely freed from all sins. This is the state of divine love. A person engaged Only administering to the physical welfare of the human society cannot factually help anyone, because there's karma. So let me explain. So a devotee will sometimes help people physically, yes, but at the same time, they give them Krishna consciousness. So we're helping them physically, helping them spiritually. It's not that we neglect people's physical states. We try to help them physically, but we actually give them the real remedies so that physical problem, challenge, doesn't occur again. Temporary relief of the external body and the mind is not satisfactory. The real cause of one's difficulties in the hard struggle for life may be found in one's forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. When a man is fully conscious, there's that word, fully. Fully means you realize who you are in the spiritual world. When a man is fully conscious of his relationship with Krishna, he's actually a liberated. So, although he may be in the material tabernacle, that's a fancy word for covering or body or something like that. Very nice verse. Phew. These are just like really eye-opening verses. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatta chetasam avito brahma nirvanam vartate viditatmanam. Kama from desires, krodha and anger, vimuktanam, of those who are liberated, yatinam, of the saintly persons. It means actually, yatinam basically means in Sanskrit of the renounced persons or sannyasis. Yata chetasam, who have full control over the mind, avhita, assured in the near future, brahma nirvanam, liberation in the supreme, spiritual liberation. Vartate is there. Vidita atmanam, of those who are self-realized. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So here Krishna is backtracking a little bit, and he's saying, but even those who are able to control the anger and material desires and are disciplined and endeavoring for perfection, even though they may not have achieved perfection, they're assured of liberation because they will get it. They're on the path. So purport of, the saintly persons who are constantly engaged in striving towards salvation, one who is in Krishna consciousness is the best of all. The Bhagavatam, the 4th chapter, 22nd chapter, text 39, confirms this fact. Yadpada pankaja palasa vilasa bhakja karmashayam graditam udgratayanti shanta. Just try to worship in devotional service Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even great sages are not able to control the forces of the senses as effectively as those who are engaged in transcendental bliss by serving the lotus feet of the Lord, uprooting the deep-grown desire for fruit of activities. In the conditioned soul, the desire to enjoy the fruit of result of work is so deeply rooted that it is very difficult even for the great sages to control such desires, despite great endeavors. A devotee of the Lord constantly engaged in devotional service and Krishna consciousness, perfect in self-realization, very quickly attains liberation in the Supreme. Owing to his complete knowledge and self-realization, he always remains in trance. Trance may mean thinking of his eternal relationship with Krishna, or it may mean just thinking on how to please Krishna and Krishna's representative. It's the same thing. Prabhupada actually said that. Someone who's always thinking on how to help others and spread Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada termed him as a Mahabhagwat, someone who never falls down and was always thinking of how to reach out to others. Mahabhagwat means big devotee. That means the topmost devotee. To cite an analogous example of this, darshana dhyana samsparsharama chakurama vihanga maha swanyapatyani pushnanti tataham api padmaja. By vision, by meditation, by touch, only do the fish, the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring. Similarly do I also, O Padmaja. In other words, by meditating or being fixed on something, whether you're a tortoise that sits on his egg or meditates on the egg or fish who does whatever he does with the eggs and the birds, which definitely they do sit on the eggs, but they're doing their thing, their duty. The fish brings up its offspring simply by looking at them. The tortoise brings up its offspring simply by meditation. The eggs of the tortoise are laid on land, and the tortoise meditates on the eggs while in the water. Big yogi. Similarly, the devotee in Krishna consciousness, although far away from the Lord's abode, can elevate himself to that abode simply by thinking of him constantly by engagement in Krishna consciousness. And that's an interesting phrase. We think of Krishna constantly by thinking of our service to him. That's the same as thinking of Krishna. Krishna is non-different from his service. Just that verse we mentioned many times before, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagno, Brahmanavutam, Brahmatena Gantavyam, Brahmakarma Samadhanam, that one who is absorbed in his service for Krishna, he becomes spiritualized. The service becomes spiritualized. The result becomes spiritualized. Everything connected with it becomes spiritualized. Because the service for Krishna is non-different from Krishna, like we offer food to Krishna, and that food becomes non-different from Krishna, prasadam. He does not feel the pangs of material miseries. This state of life is called Brahma Nirvana. So Nirvana means it's a negative, or the absence of material miseries. And Brahma means spiritual. So one is on the spiritual plane, and there's Nirvana. He's negated material miseries. Or the absence of material miseries due to being constantly immersed in the Supreme. Same thing. So move ahead with this. So, next two texts. Sparsham kritva bahirvayam chakshus jayavantare virvaho pranapano samau kritva nasabhyantara charinau yatendriya manaho bhutir munir moksha parayanaha vigateja vaya krodo yaksada muktahi vasaha. Sparshan, sense objects such as sound, kripa, keeping, bahi, external, bahi, unnecessary, chakshu, eyes, cha, also, eva, certainly, antare, between, bruvaho, the eyebrows, prana, upon, now, up and down, moving air. You yogis are going to like this verse. Samal, in suspension, kripa, keeping, nasa, avyantara, within the nostrils, charanao, blowing, yata, controlled, indriya, senses, mana, mind, buddhi, intelligence, muni, the transcendentalist moksha for liberation, purayanaha, being so destined, vigata, having discarded icha, wishes, boya, fear, krodha, anger, ya, one who, sada, always, muktaha, liberated, eva, certainly, saha, he is. So this is like yoga. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows. And he's right here. So two eyebrows. Suspending, there's a reason for that. Prabhupada explained that you keep your eyes half closed. It's not that you close your eyes all the way, because if you close your eyes all the way, you will go to sleep. So you close your eyes halfway and stare at basically the tip of the nose or between the two eyebrows, and you don't go to sleep and you don't see anything nonsense either. Accomplishes a lot. Suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses, intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So in other words, this is a type or a methodology of controlling the mind, senses, intelligence. A very difficult way, but you do become liberated in this way, because then ultimately you focus your mind on Krishna, like Patanjali mentions, Ishvara Pradhana. In other words, you focus your mind on Ishwar. Ishwar is the name of Krishna. Krishna is Paramishwara, Ishwara Sarvabhutanam. So many times Krishna is referred to as Ishwara. That's one of his names. He is not the nameless one. He is not I am that I am. He is Ishwara, controller. Being engaged in Krishna consciousness, one can immediately understand one's spiritual identity. And then one can understand the Supreme Lord by means of devotional service. So in other words, we can all understand immediately our spiritual identity as servants of Krishna, and then the details get filled out as we go along. At least we all know that. No matter who you are, what you are, where you are, you're always a servant of Krishna. Jiveva Swarupahoy Nacha Krishna Das. When one is well situated in devotional service, one comes to the transcendental position, qualified to feel the presence of the Lord in the sphere of one's activity. This particular position is called liberation of the Supreme. So in other words, when you make enough advancement, you can actually feel Krishna there with you. At that point, you're liberated. And actually, that's one of the stages of the prema. Krishna comes and says to you, "Hi, I'm Krishna," like he did with Lord Brahma. He actually shook Lord Brahma's hand. And the nice thing about that was there was no coronavirus, so he could actually... Let me just turn off my phone. People do have a habit of texting during my class when they should be listening to a class. So, let's see, this particular vision is called Liberation in the Supreme. So, when one's qualified. So after explaining the above principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as to how one can come to that position by the practice of the mysticism of yoga, or yoga known as Ashtanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. So Yama means restrictions, like we have our four regular principles. Niyama means positive injunctions, go to a holy place, sit on some deerskin so the snakes don't bite you to death. Asana, sit in certain positions, learn a position so your feet don't go to sleep, so you can feel comfortable sitting for a long period of time. Pranayama, breathe in a certain way, offer the ingoing breath to the outgoing breath, etc. Pratyahara, withdrawing the senses. Pratyahara. That's an interesting word. Dharana, concentrating, and then jhana, meditation, and finally samadhi, being completely fixed, absorbed. In the sixth chapter, the subject of yoga is explicitly detailed, and at the end of the fifth, it is only preliminarily explained. One has to drive out the sense objects such as sound, touch, form, taste, and smell by the pratyahara process in yoga, and then keep the vision of the eyes between the two eyebrows and concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed lids. That's what I mentioned before, half-closed. There's no benefit in closing the eyes altogether, Prabhupada said the same thing I just said, because there's every chance of falling asleep. One may think that they're meditating, but they are sleeping. Nor is there a benefit in opening the eyes completely, because there is the hazard of being attracted by sense objects, exactly what I said. So you have closed them, and you really can't see anything clearly, so even if someone walks by that's very attractive, you won't even notice them. Actually, even a better method is if you happen to be nearsighted, you just take your glasses off. That accomplishes the same thing. Unfortunately, I am not nearsighted anymore. Since I had cataract surgery, I'm farsighted, so I can see everything that's going on, so I better keep my eyes half closed. Not really. I keep my eyes fully open to see Krishna. We see many devotees half-closed or fully closed their eyes during Mangalarti, and that's not yoga anymore. The breathing movement is restrained within the nostrils by neutralizing the up-moving and down-moving air, that's offering the incoming breath, the outgoing breath, etc., within the body. By practice of such yoga, one is able to gain control over the senses, refrain from outward sense objects, and thus prepare oneself for liberation in the Supreme. This yoga process helps one become free from all kinds of fear and anger, and thus feel the presence of the super soul in the transcendental situation. In other words, Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of executing yoga principles. As we mentioned before, Krishna consciousness is simply to give your heart to Krishna. Krishna consciousness is executed with your heart. You just give it to Krishna, and then all this is taken care of. You don't have to do all this twisty, twirly stuff. This will be thoroughly explained in the next chapter. A Krishna conscious person, however, being always engaged in devotional service, does not risk losing his senses to some other engagement. In other words, he can open his eyes. This is a better way of controlling the senses than by the Ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga. Ashta means eight, Anga means limbs. So we don't have eight arms or limbs, but the Ashtanga yoga system has eight parts, which probably previously mentioned. Yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, jhana, and samadhi. And this is really important verse. This is what the verse that Prabhupada mentioned as the peace formula. Peace on the microcosmic scale and the macrocosmic scale. What does that mean? Peace internally and peace in the world. If everyone could understand this, there would be peace, love, no racism, no sexism, and it would be a kumbaya moment. Or not moment, it would be a kumbaya world. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshram suridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shanti mrichati. So Bhaktaram means the beneficiary, yajna of sacrifices, tapasam and penances and austerities, sarva loka of all planets and the demigods thereof, maha ishram, the supreme lord. Ha means great, ishram means a controller. Suridam means the benefactor or well-wisher. It actually means also well-wisher. Surit means good heart, someone who really cares for you, not just an ordinary friend. Sarva, of all, Bhutanam, living entities, Gatva, Dasnalin, Mam, Me, Lord Krishna. Shantim, relief, that means peace, from material pangs. And Richati, one achieves. Wonderful, famous verse. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. In other words, you know Krishna, the whole world is meant to serve Krishna, basically. And he's in charge of everything. And he, whatever he does, benefactor means, bene means good factor. Krishna is good to you, and he loves you, and he's in your heart. And he's not just an ordinary friend, a fair weather friend. Krishna stays in your heart all the time, even if you take the body of a pig, as we mentioned yesterday. That's how much he loves you. And he's patiently waiting for you. When will this pig turn back to me? Or even worse, when will this pig who's in a human body turn back to me? I mean, what's worse than a pig? I mean, a pig in a human body. That means someone who acts like that, simply interested in eating, sleeping, mating, defending in a human body. That's worse. And that person attains peace from the pangs of material misery. So that's really, so if society would recognize that, that Krishna is the ultimate benefactor of society, or the beneficiary, everything should be focused on him. And everybody is just so happy and peaceful. Society should be arranged like that, and that requires what we call varnashram, which we talked about before. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world. In other words, they want the kingdom of God without God. Or with it, their particular conception of God. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, that means not simply knowing that Krishna is the beneficiary, knowing that Krishna is your friend, but acting. Knowing means to act. If you know something, you should act consistently with your knowledge. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because he is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than he. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6-7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tamishwaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. He's the supreme controller, and Maheshwaram, the supreme controller. That controller is the supreme controller. Param means also supreme. or great controller. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be lords of all they survey. But actually, they are not. A man is the king of this castle. But actually, they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator. And all living entities, including the great demigods and politicians, are his subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. There ain't no other way. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna Karma Yoga means to work for Krishna, and in this way become connected to Krishna. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is a path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes in contact with Maya illusion. In other words, originally we were pure souls. We come in contact with Maya illusion due to the desire to lord it over Maya. I want to be like Krishna. Okay, give it a try. Or as Prabhupada said, sometimes a young girl, a little baby girl, wants to see cook like her mother cooks, and her mother gives a play stove, and all that she can do is bake some mud pies in the play stove. And that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life, even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, for it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. Practice, practice. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Prabhupada's really summarizing so many things here. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast, in other words, determined, loyal, etc., etc., in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions remains factually in the transcendental stage, or Brahma Nirvana, the negation of the material miseries and the positive aspect of the spiritual energy. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. What's the ultimate purpose? Samadhi, absorption. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of, now Prabhupada's talking about Ashtanga, the Eightfold Yoga practice, yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, jnana, and samadhi. But these only preface perfection. They are only like preliminary by devotional service. So why not just take the quick path and take the elevator up instead of all the stairs? One time I went to the Statue of Liberty and I thought I'd be a hero by walking up all the stairs to the top or to the crown of the Statue of Liberty. And it was a long walk and a difficult walk. But those only preface perfection and by devotion, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of karma yoga or action in Krishna consciousness. So tomorrow we will start chapter 6. How's that? So now we will take some questions after I release the hold on all of you speaking. Give me 1 second. Golden dot. Okay, now you can all ask your questions. Who has a question? Remember, I can see your videos. Those of you who are sleeping, I can see very well. You know, so, and the whole world can see you too. And actually, when this goes on Facebook, whole world will see you for eternity sleeping. So it's good to be attentive in this particular case. And that's why some people actually turn their videos off so they can just sleep. And
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay, Anshul. It's good
Hare
to
Krishna
see
Maharaj.
You.
Dandavat Pranam. Dandavat Pranam. How are you?
Fine. How are you? Really good to see you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thanks for the class. Maharaj, I had a question. So we understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are blessed with devotee association and Vaishnavas to really understand the true meaning of that. But there are a lot of different groups, as you know, within even Hinduism that sometimes talk about other demigods as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Lord Shiva, for example. And they normally quote straight out of the Shiv Puran, which glorifies Lord Shiva and all of that. And there's a lot of confusion in the Hindu community when they talk about that. Why are there so many conflicting, even looks like our Shastras are conflicting in that as well?
Well, yeah, let me explain that really quickly. Like many of these Shastras, like the Shiv Puran and even the Mahabharata to a certain extent, have been, changed throughout the ages. Of course, we have no objection to the glorification of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is, in one sense, God, but not with a big G, because he's a special expansion of Krishna. So he's in a special category, but he's not the supreme God. So we have no problem with that. And if you take specific verses, even from the Shiva Purana that's been changed, you will find that Lord Shiva is not really considered to be above Krishna. But he's sometimes addressed as the Supreme. And in that particular context, Lord Shiva is the Supreme. Actually, he's considered to be the Supreme devotee of Krishna. And if you go back to certain literatures, Lord Shiva says, himself, he says, Radhanam Sarvesham Vishnu Radhanam Param Tasmat Parataram Devi Twidiyanam Samarchanam. He says, of all types of worship, and that's right from the Puranas, worship of Vishnu is supreme, and better than worship of Vishnu is worship of Vishnu's devotees. So in one sense, you can even say worship of Shiva is better than worship of Vishnu, if you understand who Shiva is. So we are not against worship of Shiva.
Yep.
For example, in Bhubaneswara, which is sometimes called Gupta Kashi, hidden Kashi. Kashi is Lord Shiva's abode on this earth. What they do is they take the remnants of Lord Jagannath, Jagannath Puri, which is close to Bhubaneswara, and they bring it to Lord Shiva to eat every day. So Lord Shiva is eating remnants of Krishna.
So do we think therefore the Shiv Puran, for example, when they're talking about I'm sure they're glorifying Lord Shiva, but when they're talking in him as the supreme, that's a
misinterpretation even of the existing Shiva Puran, which has actually been the Shiva Puran has actually been altered because it hasn't come down into cyclic succession. Even the Mahabharata, which we do accept, has been altered dramatically. There's something like 84 different versions of the Mahabharata and different places of India. And as you know, the Ramayana, there's different Ramayans. There's the, of course, the Valmiki Ramayana, the original. Then you have the Tulsidas Ramayana in North India. And then you have certain Ramayans in South India. So one really has to get knowledge through the cyclic succession to understand the purpose of the Vedas. And so there are four basic disciplic successions. One is called the Shiva Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya, then there's Brahma Sampradaya, and there's the Kumara Sampradaya and the Lakshmi Sampradaya. And all those different Sampradayas, they actually agree upon who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Shankaracharya, who is considered to be an incarnation of Lord Shiva, he corroborates, or he says that Narayana Parovyaktat, and he makes so many statements that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so one book that I think all Hindus accept is what? The Gita.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find, And the Gita definitely posits Krishna and Vishnu above all the demigods, including Lord Shiva. And if you read the Gita, and the Gita is something that everyone accepts. The problem is many of these scriptures, not the Gita, have been changed because they haven't been passed down in disciplic succession. And also, who is translating them?
Mm.
Like, you can go through the Gita, and let's say there's Dr. Radhakrishna, who used to be the president of India. He translated the Gita, but he translated it by changing the meaning of the words. Mm. So I think you have to see what edition of the Shiva Purana they're referring to. Secondly, who actually translated, because all these people, none of them understand, practically none of them understand Sanskrit at all. Like, you have someone who's very much respected in India, Vivekananda, you probably heard of him before.
Yep.
He didn't understand Sanskrit, he never read the Vedas. So he's supposed to be a great, you know, scholar, teacher of Hinduism, but he never even read the Vedas.
Wow.
So what did he know?
Yeah.
He made up his own philosophy and, you know, just basically may have quoted some things that he heard from other people about Vedic literatures. So the Mahabharata itself has an interesting verse in this connection. The verse is, Tarko Pratishta Shuti Na Vibhina, which states that one cannot understand the purpose of things or who is actually God by reading the Vedas or even by argumentation and reasoning. And the Mahabharata ends with the conclusion of Mahajanayena Sapanta. Yeah, Mahajan may be corrupted. Sapanta. That one must follow in the footsteps or take his or her information from a great pure devotee of Krishna, a great personality.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Sometimes people can even read the Mahabharata and not understand that Krishna is God.
Yes.
I mean, that's the funny thing. They take Krishna as an ordinary person in spite of having the Gita in the middle of the Mahabharata, in spite of so much evidence that Krishna is God, but still they don't accept him. I mean, even Duryodhana didn't accept Krishna as God after seeing the universal form.
Yeah. That's right.
So basically, what I would do, you know, if I was going to preach to someone who said they were Hindus and had some other god that they were worshiping, I would basically ask them, how do you know? You know, how do you know what you know or what you think you know? And usually they will not have any substantial reference, Vedic reference. They'll just say, well, this is the way my mother taught me. This is the way we've always been worshiping. I know that, you know, in my preaching in Fiji, people are very much attached to traditions.
Yep.
And their worship is based upon what they were taught by their parents rather than what they came to the conclusion of by their own studies and acceptance of the spiritual preceptor. So this is, in philosophy, that's called epistemology. How do you know what you know? So I would ask people that question, you know. All right, you think that Ganesh is the supreme God. Why? You know, how do you know that? You know, give me some proof. And people are not able to prove it. They may take a verse out of context in the Shiva Purana or something like that, but if you take the Shiva Purana as a whole, even if you had a bona fide edition, you wouldn't find that Ganesh or Shiva was considered absolutely higher than Krishna.
Right. Okay, Maharaj, anyway, thank you so much for that.
It's an interesting study, but most people don't even know why they believe what they believe in.
That's true, very true.
It's just traditional. I mean, most people in the world just follow traditions. I mean, like in Christianity, for example, there's so many different branches and beliefs about Jesus Christ and basically what you do to get salvation. Some people think Jesus Christ is God. Some people think he's the Son of God. And even in Christianity, there was actually a fight, a physical fight between two priests a number of years ago. This was actually, we're talking about 1,500 years ago. And that's what determined the present philosophy of the church to a large extent.
Wow.
Interesting. Actually, it was more like 500 or 600 years ago, not 1500 years ago. And there's a book written about it. If you're interested in researching Christian theology, it's called When Jesus Became God. Because previously Jesus was considered the Son of God, and then all of a sudden people wanted to think of him as God. Anyway, so same thing in Hinduism.
Okay. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay. So any other questions from anybody?
Yes, Maharaj, I have a question.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. I can hear you.
Yes, I have a question, Maharaj. Please accept my obeisances in all respects
to all devotees. Good. We don't see you.
Hare Krishna.
At least we see your name. I can hear you.
Yeah. Well, I have a question, and this is concerning maybe the same train of thought that we're going through now with the question of with the previous Prabhu. The question is, what if someone believes this is God? Like, for instance, Jesus Christ, they say this is God. Okay, then people have to believe that that's God. And another person maybe in, I don't know, in the Amazons, you know, believe that this is their God. And they fervently believe that that's God.
Right.
Would that affect the result of the devotion that the devotee has towards their specific name of God? Or their
It depends on their conception of God. You know, it just depends on what they conceive God. You know, they can give God a name like God. God is a name of God. So if they have a conception of God as the supreme being, even if they give him another name, as long as they're designating that person of whom they have a conception as God, they're making some spiritual advancement. As long as they're thinking there's a supreme controller, he's omniscient, he's omnipresent, and he's also good. He's a good guy. Then they're making some spiritual advancement, at least recognition of some higher power, even if they don't know the name. I mean, Krishna says, we should not disturb the minds of those who are materially attached, but encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. So generally talking about what the last person asked about Hinduism, that many people believe that Shiva is God or Ganesha is God or Durga is God or whatever, most of the times you would not approach it directly and just tell them that's not God. You would say, or at least I would say, all right, so pray to Ganesh, pray to Shiva, and pray that they will reveal their position to you. And then I'd make the point that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but I wouldn't criticize the person they worship. If you criticize the person they worship, then they just get angry. But I would present that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But yes, but by accepting someone as supreme, or accepting that there is a supreme, and understanding that there is a supreme person, even though you don't know who the supreme person is, even though you may give him a particular name, you are actually on the spiritual path. That's actually positive. Like, even if you worship something superior, like the sun or the moon, that's a step in the right direction. It's not the absolute conclusion, the absolute truth, but it's a step in the right direction to accept something as superior. Like, you find the American Indians, they would worship different aspects of the material creation. And that's a step in the right direction. Okay? So, any other questions? Shruti, you had a question?
Thank you, Maharaj.
What? Okay, thank you, Gauri. So, Shruti, what's your question? You got to take yourself off mute. Okay. Okay. What's your question? I can't hear you. I can't hear you. You're not on mute, but I can't hear you. And I can't read lips. All right. I guess your microphone's not working or something like that. Sorry about that.
You can type it in.
What's that?
You can type it in on chat.
No, that's all right. That's all right. So you can ask the question later. Who's that? Oh, that's your friend. Okay, so ask your question through, that's Kalindi's, right? All right, so ask the question.
My question was in regards to...
Uh-oh. We lost you.
Talking about in the beginning of class.
Your connection's not good. I can't hear you. I can't understand. I don't think anyone else can understand either. It's your connection is not good. Okay, you'll get a chance to ask a question later.
Okay, oh wow. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Yeah, ask a question. Okay. So that was Shruti. Okay, one other person can ask a question. Yes, Radha Padma. Okay.
Dev Hare Krishna, please accept my obeisances.
Send my blessings.
Guru Maharaj, this question keeps coming. Understanding that in this end of the chapter also, Srila Prabhupada says a pure soul is, the soul is the eternal servant of God and his fragmental part and parcel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if my understanding is correct in this, that we were pure soul before. Then being in the spiritual world, how this question of I want to enjoy in this verse where Krishna is the supreme enjoyer even comes.
Somehow or other, one wanted to imitate Krishna. That the details are never really explained, but somehow or other, one wanted to imitate Krishna. Prabhupada gave the example of a young girl wanting to imitate her mother who's cooking. You know, no ill intention, but she wants to imitate. And that's how. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says no one can trace out the living entity's entrance into the material world.
Yeah.
But somehow or other, exactly what we were doing before we came to the material world, that's not mentioned. You know, whether we were dancing with Krishna or just watching Krishna, but we had knowledge. And we decided, with knowledge, to do something that, you know, took us away from Krishna. We're responsible. In other words, we didn't come here just because Krishna wanted to send us here because he likes to see people suffer in the material world. We came here for a particular reason, like Prabhupada said, the material world is like a prison house, and only prisoners, at least in a good government, would go to the prison house. So there's a reason we're here. We made some deliberate action or made a deliberate decision to be here. Okay, it is time to end. I'm sorry I couldn't answer everybody's question. It is actually too late right now. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll see everybody tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.